in my pocket, they turn on and stuff.
It's amazing how much easier your texting is.
Yeah, right.
I'm on to a flip phone for until Marie finally gave him her. But he was Luddite.
Really? We always categorize all younger people have the latest and greatest technology. Not true.
I think it's because he grew up during the frustrating years of computer technology. When I tell you, we got the one of the Mac. The 2GS, supposed to be the big new thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was a Wozniak design. And just, it was just an exercise in frustration. He was so frustrated with it. And I think that's part of it. It's also just the way it is.
I'm mad and I'm not taking it anymore.
I don't even actually like having a phone.
Yeah, I know.
You know? It's necessary.
Yeah.
That was funny. I didn't see her.
No.
She slipped in like a mouse.
You should have gone for the brownies for good.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, those brownies are back.
Brownies are back.
So do you have a concert tomorrow?
Yes. Yeah.
Is that the one at Park?
No.
Yeah.
New Hope Winery.
Oh, okay.
What's this?
It's a band from Delaware, I think, called Echoes. And they're a Pink Floyd cover band. And they're in good.
Oh, damn.
And you can get tickets.
Oh.
New Hope Winery is a nice venue. Pretty laid back.
Oh, that sounds nice.
The New Hope Winery is great. Okay. It is laid back.
They're not the ones that I heard. We both went some of experiencing up in New Hope.
No. That band is Think Pink Floyd.
Okay.
I haven't heard them play in a while.
Think Pink.
But I saw the Echoes band at the Sellersville.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's the way you do it. You play the guitar on the MTV. That ain't working. You get your money for nothing and your chicks for free. Yeah. There were some diehard Pink Floyd fans in the audience and they were ecstatic. So I was like, nice.
Jeez.
Yeah. I'm going with brother-in-law Bob.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The dentist?
Yes.
He's a nice guy.
He is a nice guy. And he likes a good Pink Floyd band, too. Like any dentist should.
Yeah, he can't be all bad.
He's
terrible,
Pink Floyd.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Right.
Are you just auditing the class?
Oh, I had to ask them to leave. They came here to clean. Yeah. You know, our friend Stephanie, is it? Who runs the day program? Very well with us. But then again, we're here sporadically, so. We haven't been here in over a month, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been a between concerts and Jeannie Zandi and other stuff. Been here a while.
But you're on the schedule still, right?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
She's good at
right. She deployed her crew without checking for conflicts. I do that all the time. Well, there's nothing startling to say amongst old friends. So.
No, when like really weird becomes normal, you're just like, fuck.
Yeah. I hope the Night Sky Sangha experience has not become too stale or staid or predictable for you.
Those shirts ought to spice it up.
Oh, yeah.
Well, sometimes there's different kinds of snacks.
Yeah, that's the best we can do is mix up the snacks. Conversation is the same. You could just play a tape. But the snacks, that's fucking live.
They don't have any other mugs, do they?
Yours is the last mug they have.
This one is a mug.
So since we become disinterested in talking about ourselves, we can always talk about other people that aren't here. That's free game. Thank you very much. Terra. Terra means the Latin. What's the Latin for terra? The end? The earth?
Terracotta, terraforma.
Earthy, isn't it? Earthy or something like that? Isn't terraforma?
When I sky song, it's the only place you can hear potato chips crunched loudly in your ear.
I'm trying to do it.
During your... hearing the program.
I've
never seen Ajashanti eat during one of his presentations.
That's why I can't relate to him.
Yeah. Yeah. Dude, do you snack or, you know, what?
Are you above snacking?
Are you above snacking? I mean, does Mukti just not feed you? What the hell's going on?
He's pretty skinny.
He's skinny? Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's right. He's sincere, though.
Mm-hmm. We can start with our slogan for this evening. Love is patient. Love is kind.
Love is patient. Love is kind.
That's worse.
Is that a John Lennon song?
Not.
I think so.
Love is right? Remember that song? No. Hello? Bitcoin Baba.
Richie Rich.
Someone that actually does interesting things with his spare time.
And time that I don't have a spare as well.
Yeah.
Probably some of your other interests.
Once you retire, I hope you'll be doing some volunteer work at a soup kitchen or something.
Yeah, maybe. I'm really interested.
Yeah.
Soup kitchens on yachts, so I don't know about that.
Soup kitchens on private yachts. Yeah, we have one, but swimming out to it is a bear.
Well, look, if you need a bodyguard, my muscles might be able to do that for you.
Uh-huh. From solitary, right?
Cart me around.
No, I mean,
he's a good driver, right? That's the
thing. Oh, no.
Oh, he's like Baby Driver.
I thought he was the guy who drives people around, yeah?
Yeah.
That's not the driver you want. Okay.
Yeah. He's the aggressive driver.
Okay. Well, that's what I like.
Oh, well, hell. You're good then.
You can get away from people.
Okay. Yeah, you can do it.
Habits are a funny thing. It's a funny aspect of muggledom.
Habits?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
It's not like they're firm and fixed, but they seem to recycle over and over.
Oh, yeah. Pretty ingrained.
Oh, yeah.
Man, this is such a mess every time. I was so careful. It's just all over me.
Oh.
The Nature Valley bars?
Oh, Nature Valley bars, yeah. Well, there's not enough sawdust in those, so they just fall apart.
I need some more epoxy.
I could have brought
supper. He'd have cleaned up anything that, you know, he'd have been happy to, but I didn't bring him.
Oh, okay.
Cleaning his
grunts. Uh-huh. The canine vacuum?
Yeah.
Themes? Topics? Anybody read anything? Ben Smythe?
Well, yeah, that's
Smythe. That thing was, I mean, I laughed.
When he went for the gazing thing, that was funny.
Thing.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, see, you related to him.
I know. I mean, that was fun for me.
I mean, I haven't seen Chatskill.
Easily abused.
Does he do that a lot?
Yeah. He's a starer, yeah.
Yeah.
And
wait, you never seen Chatskill?
I've seen him. I didn't particularly.
Nice mug.
Of course, right?
Hi.
Great.
How are things?
But was it, I didn't know when it's just like a trick. I think it's
the staring?
Trick.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, but I know that in Proverbs it says he's in a fool who flies if he keeps his match up.
Boy, I got to put that one on my fridge.
Forget it. Don't even try. That's
great.
It wouldn't be natural.
Wouldn't
yeah.
It? Yeah. People will find some way to criticize you, even if you're quiet and look wise.
I said I'm quiet.
Yeah. Hi.
Hi.
Which group are you looking for?
Sangha?
That's us, yes.
Have arrived.
I'm Jeff. Your name is?
David.
Hello, David. David, how do we know you, or how do you know us?
I know you through just having looked around.
Uh-huh.
I start my own who am I meetup.
Uh-huh.
If I'd known that you existed in the way that you do, I probably wouldn't have bothered to start it.
Uh-huh.
I'll keep it going.
Yeah.
Because all the other spiritual meetups with all their angles and
yeah.
trips and so forth didn't really seem like it was anything like what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
In the areas.
That's right. Yeah. Well, welcome.
What's your meetup?
It was Suzanne.
Suzanne went to see you.
Right, Suzanne came to see
you. In Mount Airy, right?
Yeah.
She loved the church. Yeah.
You're the Sagadada dude?
Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
Somebody's got to be.
Whoa.
Every county needs to have its near Sagadada dude.
I am that. Good. You mean North Sagadada dude?
That's a good t-shirt. I'm a North Sagadada dude.
Some interesting things going on over there in the building.
The Star Group.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you walked in there. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. Did you get hit with a message from the deceased entity?
No, I sure didn't.
Oh, sorry about that. If you
like
stay around long enough. Yeah.
Some yelling over there.
Really yelling? Yeah. Oh, yeah, those crystals, they can really get you.
To keep it fresh, you got to get extra quick. Mm-hmm. It's like real
excitement.
Different flavors of tea just doesn't cut it.
Yeah. You know how you've been around this. You know how this rolls in various ways. You know, in the early stages of introducing anybody to these curious kinds of teachings, you know, there's a set of, let's say, pointers. You know, Ramesh used that word a lot, pointers and memes and things that, you know, kind of help orient or distort one's sense of confidence, right? And so many of us have been having this conversation for a while, so, you know, fuck those. We just don't use those much. For someone that's new, that wouldn't have the background that you have, you know, then it's fun to kind of usher somebody into, to see if there's a, you know, a handshake, right? Like, this is what we do, and what is it that you do, and do we have any bridge? Sometimes we get a bridge. Many times there's no bridge.
Running out the door.
Yeah, we've lost a few people.
He's understating.
run out the door. It gets ridiculous after a while. In order for a so-called human being to engage a human being in contemporary society, you lay down some tracts that solicit or cajole, manipulate, provide a relief for nonsense, right? Just tons and tons of nonsense, because that's how we kind of initially get to know each other, is through a didactic, and to see if that didactic is, shared somehow, of one's spiritual journey is, right, shared.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And if you dispense with that, it's just, we're all bozos on this bus. I mean, it really is absolute, buffoonery. So if there's nothing left in your in your spiritual lexicon, because the myth of becoming has revealed itself with greater temerity, snacks, tea, gossip, that's just fucking it. And still, even for the several years that several of us here have been meeting, you always find kind of a curious gossip or criticism or something juicy, to get the thing started. Scatological references, that's right.
Genocide.
Genocide is also always a good one. That's
genitals.
Genitals, genocide, and scatological references. Sangha. Well, you have to come a little more often when they're...
Just
tip
to the door.
Yeah, right through the threshold. In that respect, we're a blank slate. What do you got?
I've got a raft of experience in different groups. Mostly bhakti yoga seems to be my primary orientation by disposition.
Yeah, nice.
And but it's the intellectual element that some of these major spiritual paths have. They're there, but they're not emphasized. So sometimes I like to go to places where they're emphasized.
Yeah.
And I don't mean intellectual, I mean straight,
Yeah, sure.
Dialogue, going to naked truth.
Naked, yeah, that's right. Yeah, me too.
Bart Marshall and Paul Hederman.
Yeah, I don't like Bart so much, but, it's just not my cup of tea. Paul I know and have hung out with, here and on the West Coast, so, yeah.
Bart's really been a great teacher for me. Although he seems to have gone a little bit crazy online.
I know.
Oopsie doopsie daisy.
On Facebook, you mean?
Yeah.
Where's he going? What's happening?
This is woke folks.
Yeah.
Right? Woke book. Yeah. I mean, he's very conspiratorial.
Yeah. Oh, I see. Yeah.
I think anyone that was inclined in that direction has now gone crazy.
Listen. Yeah.
Well, I think my own sense is that he doesn't necessarily believe the stuff he puts out. He just wants to disabuse people of their normal sense of reality.
Sure. Yeah, right. Use whatever crazy vehicle you have.
Consider something crazy. It might be just as plausible.
Sure. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Unhinging is, it's an ancient tool. Right?
Nisargadatta, I call him the Spinoza of enlightened beings.
Sure. Yep. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And what intrigued me about what you wrote in the email was you alluded to You said that Nisargadatta, of course, he will occasionally use Hindu metaphors and so forth.
Occasionally, yeah.
Vocabulary, but
right.
He is about as objective and straightforward and empirical as anyone I ever had of India. So if he's logically inclined by your standards, then I'm more than curious to come here this evening and see what I encounter.
Right. Wow. Well, thanks.
I mean,
prepare to be disappointed. Thank you. Whew, I was starting to sweat there, but now I'm feeling better. You're right. In your Nisargadatta was then, I would say not as much now, but, you know, then if someone were journeying, let's say, from the, you know, the Ram Dass era, the Trungpa era, the Ramakrishna, the Ramana Maharshi, you know, the Aurobindo, we can go on and on, right? Krishnamurti, right? So yeah, so you look at the Dharma, the Asian.
I got a doctorate of religious studies, by the way. So I study all this stuff officially.
Great.
Just so y'all know.
Good. Then you know it better than anybody in this room. I just drop names and pretend to have some familiarity, but I lie genetically. You know, you look at the no one's done a very good job of it. Really, looking back, let's say, to the Beat generation or earlier than Beat generation, going back, let's say, to when Vivekananda spoke at the World Congress, right? I mean, before that, you're not going to find, right, a hell of a lot of stuff. And most likely that presentation predated, you know, Blavatsky and the early theosophists, right? So if you're looking back for the seeds of Asian, right, Dharma, Indian Dharma, inoculating the West, you'd have to go to the Vivekananda moment.
Yeah.
What happened before then. And then since then, you can have fun being a PhD, let's say, in that field. I mean, just flipping out, right? Looking at the personas and the teachings and the reiterations and the recasting of this body of, crazy wisdom through all the perturbations and social events that would have to include TM and the Beatles, right?
Yeah.
And the Doors of Perception and the fucking Hobbit and Castaneda, right? Whoa! Yeah, so you just like, in a sense, revel, you know, like any rock and roll addict should revel in the pageantry of Indian and Asian Dharma infiltrating Western consciousness. Franklin Merrill Wolfe. Yeah. You know, Wittgenstein, right? Yeah, so you're like, oh, you know, where do you go? Who do you become? Where does your loyalty, I'm not sure if lay or lie. And if you're, let's say, bhakti-oriented, then you've got a whole nother fun pile of stuff to participate in, whether it's
I think in general, you know, a lot of people move from, in a way, those of us who go directly to unstructured, pure jnani paths like this, I guess fortunate in some ways, because of those of us who work through all these structured paths and only later in the journey approach to a pure, you're ready to really cast aside all of
the
you've used and all the notions and ideas. And,
well, that is the bhakti path. I mean, you're cooked.
Right?
You're cooked. And so the convergence of pure, you know, jnana yoga, insight yoga, whether it's Vipassana from the Asian or da-da-da-da-da or Dzogchen or Kashmiri, wherever, you're cooked. And your one's bhakti, whether it's, you know, deity devotion, God devotion, Brahmanic devotion, emptiness devotion, whoosh, they're like, you know, they meet up. They were never separate. And then you're just, you know, you're just fucking gushing with whatever you got, however you roll, without having to mirror, you know, the curious demonstration and presentation of all of these personalities. But, you know, fuck them. It's all you. Yeah, and that's,
But that's not necessarily an easy confidence to inhabit. Partly because as a card-carrying seeker for, you know, multiple decades, there's a natural, a codependency. The pressure, the release and the entranglement of devotion to something other than presence. So it gets, you know, fun. You start to shake with the confusion of it all because spirit underlying is looking for a resolution in other. That's Judeo-Christian, that's Islam. I mean, that's even Buddhism and Hinduism, you know, the myth of self and other.
Otherwise. For me, I can honestly say I'm so grateful to have really finally found the sense that it's all, there's this gathering and merging of all these different paths and perspectives.
Yeah.
And the remarkable truth, I mean, I have a great interest. There's one path out there called Ekankar.
Yes, of course.
Which involves, you know,
chanting
people who, you know, do all their spiritual work in the dream planes.
Well, sure. I mean, that was an hysteria that also followed the Theosophists around. Surprised me if the roots of the living Ek masters that always have the weirdest names, if you follow who they are. I mean, the strangest fucking names.
What came out of mystical Sikhism?
Came out of
mystical Sikhism.
Okay, all right. So it's got Sufi
stuff.
Yeah.
A Sikhism. Not a
Sorry, anyway, if mystical Sikhism would be then, you know, northern India, right? Parsi.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
But it's you know, it's Ekankar is an interesting case. I have more trouble integrating that one because it's this, well, the spiritist, which is this whole notion of levels and ascended masters.
It gets deep fast.
And it's all this fluff.
Yes, I mean, right.
There is a structure to higher reality. There is, I suppose, that the universe has an organization.
It's up to you.
In the sub-levels as well as...
It will respond to you. If you're structurally fond, you got it. If you're unstructurally, if you have an unstructural bent, you got it. You see, there's not a thing guiding, you know, as a principle of phenomenon. Physics might like to say, oh yeah, you know, we've made a lot of progress in terms of discovering, articulating, measuring, and reproducing conceptual field that dictates how reality, rolls. No, not the case. Yeah. So in a sense, it's, you know, who's dreaming it? Are you dreaming it or is it dreaming you? If there's nothing other than this or you, and even the sense of separation as an entity and, you know, and the universe is also mythical. So it's dreaming in situ. On demand, improvisationally, and self-fulfillingly. So if you want structure, you got it. If you don't, you needn't. But to presume that there is something that can be discovered and therefore is binding, right, that's not happening. I don't think that's the case. If it be the case, then it's the case, right, for you, for as long as it is. Yeah.
But this is a highly defined hierarchy. Is that
Ekankar? Well, you know, I mean, all these groups have their systems, and Ekankar just happens to be especially spectacular.
And there are
11 planes. You get up into ETs and the UFOs, who are part of the whole hierarchy. You know,
I mean, doesn't Catholicism have, you know, all kinds of?
Oh yeah, no, they all have what's called emanation theories. It's this notion about creation descends from God in like a series of levels and breakdowns, and then you go backwards. It's a journey of backwards in stages. And the you read the literature, connect with some of these groups that have these ascended masters and the angelic levels and everything.
Well, that's our friends over there. The Star Group is borrowing from that. Sure. Probably rather clumsily, but, you know. I mean, you can get really good at that stuff, and you can be, like we are, buffoons and still have a good time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what prevails? the phenomenal expression that occurs through an incomprehensible array of emanation, or its companion emptiness, which could give a fuck, and does not rely on preemptive existence, whether Big Bang or any other cosmology, to be itself, to be autonomous. Yeah.
This is a that's a point that Bart made in one of his retreats that I went to.
Yeah.
There's just you can't even the most basic and profound way of explaining anything. That's nonsense. It's just reality just is. There's no explanation for it.
Yeah. You know, when you melt down the didactic and do a good reduction sauce with your own consciousness.
I guess the miracle is that we all share a universe somehow, mm-hmm. or seem to.
Well, see that? I mean, that's fun, and I'll do kumbaya with you any day. But yeah, there's no we and there's no universe, nor is there any share. I mean, there's just the right throbbing perturbation of what we refer to as experience. And without narrative, you don't have universe, you don't have we, and you don't have share. Those are derived from the impersonal throbbing. Right? An association is created because experiencing is so fucking outrageous and neither you nor anybody else remembers signing up for it. And yet, you know, here it is. So let's say an organic step for the imagination of human is to come up with companion didactic, companion narrative, whether it's 11 dimensions or, you know, 3 or 300. There's only the outrageous, excruciating presence of experience. And the only one you know is yours. Right?
It's the amazing thing. And I mean, especially, you know, I'm still processing cathartic material. I have to do these days, the chanting's been my biggest engine of purification, processing stuff, which is still
sweet.
Needs to be resolved.
Kali Yuga, chant away.
Right.
That was the instruction.
The Sufi, Sufi Qawwali screaming at the top of my lungs.
Yeah.
Does the trick. Uh-huh. As almost nothing else does.
Uh-huh.
So I have to go driving in my car, in a place where the roads are.
And let it rip.
Not much traffic.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to be heard by anybody.
Yeah.
I can drive along with all the windows shut.
Yeah.
The things in the CD, I'm screaming this out my lungs. I'm weeping.
Yeah, I get it.
My eardrums are
yep.
being blown up by my voice.
Yep.
Scream this out my lungs.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's what does it.
Yes, right. Yeah, you
so
have
to process material, damn it.
Yeah, yeah. You have to go. You have to amp it up. You have to amp it up to that level to create a sufficient vibratory field that turns the trick on ecstasy. Yeah, let's go. Road trip.
It's not one loud yet, bus, but man. Boy, it's the weeping happens. It's not, I don't begin to associate it with anything.
Well, you're lucky you needn't.
Well, I'd say that was a big stepping stone for
Yeah, you cry when you're high.
I was going to say, started the primal therapy. I mean, I was all screaming. Only did.
Who's that?
John Lennon?
Oh, yes.
The screaming.
Oh, you mean Yoko Ono?
No, well, she did too. She did too. But that was just the way she sang.
Beautiful, artistic.
That's an organic vehicle. You couldn't have planned it, plotted it. You know, you're not seeking a particular outcome from it. It wells up, and you got to get behind the wheel and make it happen. Yeah, it's funny, and not that this requires any purification, but it certainly gets a bang out of it. And who's to argue with that? If it gets a bang out of purification, well, you're fucking collateral damage. It doesn't care what you do cathartically or otherwise, whether you get anywhere with it or whether you don't. So like anything, it's a vehicle of a non-thing. And, you know, one fulfills, let's just say, the karmic imprint, which can look like, you know, a cathartic demonstration. Yeah, for as long as that, you know, has fuel. Then the fuel wears out and you're like, I didn't get anywhere with it, but it sure was a blast.
This doesn't
have any implication. I mean, part of the catharsis, cathartic impulse is, well, it's a coping mechanism with the seething revelation that this isn't about anything. And it's too fucking strange for this to be as dense and profound, iterative and magnificent and improvisational as it is, but it's not about anything. And I can't fucking take it. So yeah, I'm going to get behind the wheel and I'm going to shout some shit. And yeah, I mean, it's like having a lovely Kundalini experience. And then the fuel runs out. And where do we end up? Well, there's no place to end up. You could say, well, we end up where we began, but we never really began. So it just continues to play with itself, and I don't mean in a prurient manner, but maybe it does. You know, I haven't taken the call. Hey, God, so like, I mean, are you just fucking with yourself in a prurient manner? You know, click. We don't know. Being, and if there were any, well, we're being played.
We like stories that try to get a handle on it. We love stories. I love stories that try to, like, make it make some sense. And sure, the more I do that, the less alive I feel.
Okay. And it may be possible that you can do that, or you can do that, or you can do that, or I can do that. You know, you can call me Ray. And it doesn't have to interfere with, you know, an inner countenance that knows better.
It is what it is, whether you make stories about it or not.
That's right. And what's fun is that you start, you know, it's like Terence McKenna, right? When speaking about the Big Bang, would just say, give me one little lie and, you know, we'll take it from there. Referring to the, you know, the cosmology of the Big Bang. Same thing here. You have the slightest little seed impression about anything at all as it pertains to you, the world, life, fairness, love, sacred, anything, and whoosh, you, right? Instantaneously, you have all of the implication of that. Forth as imagination, stream forth as sentiment, stream forth as sensation. And so it's really just story about story about story about story about story about story about story, but that's fucking lovely. It doesn't have to be afflictive. It doesn't have to end. It's like, yeah, okay, I got stories. You got stories. You know, everyone's got them. But what else?
Yeah, I guess there's a little bit of conditioning left of the effect that these great saints are all greater than we are. You know?
Yeah. Okay.
Jesus and all those guys.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And all this tradition and the weight.
That's right.
And so forth.
Those fuckers. Those fuckers and the traditions that encouraged that, you call it codependent duality, is a, let's just say, significant, as significant as anything can be, hump for, you know, the card carrying seeker, the card carrying jnani, the card carrying bhakta to get the fuck over. Yeah. And they are miraculous stories, so I mean, I get it. You know, they're evocative and they're fun and they're heroic and, right, pungent.
And they're mostly written by church fathers to snazz up the reality.
Okay. Right. That's right. It wasn't really a good idea for Ramana Maharshi to sit in that fucking cave and get eaten by rats and not give a shit. That was bad. He shouldn't have done that. Because then it becomes a, you know, kind of a blasphemous measure of whether you're enlightened or not, or what degree of samadhi that you're in, or, you know, whether you're Brahmanic or something shy of that, whether you're a stream entrant or you've gone all the way. All the systems do it. It's horrible. It's heartbreaking. Sorry?
Maybe if he would have stayed there, it would have been
fine. Well, if he had stayed there, then they would have eaten him and we'd never heard about him. They would have found a bag of bones at the bottom of the stairs and there would have been no guy in a diaper with a bunch of, you know, peacocks and cows running around our Arunachala stirring shit up.
I mean, that bag of bones might have put you in samadhi, though.
if you were lucky enough to stumble upon them. Yeah, I don't doubt it. Same thing with Ramakrishna, right? Or even Nirsagadatta. I mean, he wasn't necessarily a gopalic ecstatic like Ramakrishna was, but he was an ecstatic. That's for sure. And, you know, a big persona like that, a big presentation like that is, well, it's cathartic. I mean, it's wonderful. But don't take it too seriously. Really. I mean, and he couldn't help being what he was. But that doesn't mean that he was any different, any better, any more eligible, anything. This has no implication. It's not about anything. So when your Sagadatta can show up and thrill one to the, you know, dharmic bone, but you got to get over it. Because yours is the realization that counts. Nobody else's. And it comes as it comes through you as you, according to your karmic and sub-super karmic blueprint. And it's formidable. Still playing catch up by reading Hindu comic books. We're in trouble. Yeah, we're in trouble.
Those Hindu comic books are pretty good.
Oh, come on. They're really good.
What the hell would you do with, like, Nirsagadatta action, like, video? You know what I mean? Like Batman?
Yeah.
Like, how would you...
Yeah, a lot of yelling.
Yelling and smoking. You'd have to have some things. Levitation.
Dan has a question I had. It'll come back to me.
How does consciousness fool itself? It's pretty simple. It self-promotes instantaneously according to its own, you know, karmic or behavioral proclivity and insists that it has found something. And concomitant with the myth of it having found something, it's other than that thing. I mean, if there's a Patanjali level, I know that's a bold statement, but if there's a Patanjali level to the journey, it's like right here, right now, not that you can find here or now, but whatever the fuck is going on, have you found anything? You don't have to answer it. We're just playing, right? If consciousness, whatever it is, you know, right? If the scintillating, impersonal, throbbing nature of sentient being has found anything at all, boom, self and other. And then the great journey of codependency gets lit. Yeah. I mean, maybe that's why, you know, the Buddha was like alluding to life is suffering. That's a little glib, and I think the Pali was a little more subtle than that, obviously. Right? So he might have been suggesting, like, motherfucker, if you find anything at all, you're going to find unhappiness. That's different than, right? It's a different feel to it. It's very intimate. It doesn't get hung up on the circumstances and events and the perturbations of what appear as a life. It's much more direct. It's like, if you find anything at all, then, right, identity is lit. Lit. Consciousness is lit. Object, subject is lit. And if we're disappointed, if we're existentially disappointed, which likely we're going to be if we've found anything at all, well, then what happens? Well, catharsis and realization is the imaginary remedy for that. Yeah, but if you don't find anything at all, well, realization can just fuck off. Catharsis can fuck off. Bhakti, jnana, they can all just fuck off. Because there is no need for remedial intervention if subject-object is not lit. That's where, to be glib, because I have a tendency, you know, a good Sufi outrage with the windows rolled up will resolve. It will resolve that nothing is found. Which then means you can still roll up the windows and travel down an empty road to your heart's content. Or not.
Just do it in the supermarket because you don't care anymore.
Or you'll do it in the supermarket because you don't care what happens to you anymore. So this is very intimate. You see, it's not about what's happened in my life, the things that I've read, the things that I've suffered, the things that I've overcome, the things that I hope to overcome, my recovery commitment, dream interpretation, and all lovely things, but it has nothing at all to do with anything at all because that's all just dreamt. It's all just symptom. It's very intimate, and it's right here. On, you know, it's like Anapanasati, right? It's at the edge of your nose. The jhanas are at the edge of your nose. Fuck me. I can't find anything. And it's not done as a vow or a commitment. I mean, you know, it's a consciousness wiped clean. So, you know, you don't make the claim. You can't make the claim. It would be blasphemous to your understanding to make any claim at all.
So, going back,
roll it back.
You. Mr. Godot or anybody,
yeah,
says something that just blows your mind.
Yes.
Blows you away.
Right.
It just rings through the whole way. It just really reveals itself.
Yeah.
And there's a certain...
Monty Hall was good at that. Yeah. Just as good as anybody, really. Yeah.
That's just an identity thing. That's just something that... an identity could gain from? I mean, in a sense, is that...
Yes.
Am I saying that?
Yes. Well, sure. Anything, whether it's secular, banal, beneath you, or rings, you know, through your cosmic DNA.
So that's like, don't get hung up on that.
No, because see, getting hung up or not getting hung up is something you think you can or can't or should or shouldn't do. That's, you're too late.
Yeah, it's already happened. Whatever's going to happen.
It's already happened. It's already happening. It's never happened at all, nor will it ever. You tend to go to, the cajoling nature of the seducing nature of memory. To create a scenario of things that have happened, are happening, will happen, and then, of course, to me. But that's not true. It's not worth our time, though a lot of people spend a lot of money and time preempting their future to avoid possible suffering. But, hello. Right? And so, really, what that is I'm going to take myself on the road into my future. But I'm going to be armed with all kinds of, you know, tools and
I'd like to take this guy slowed down about 10 times. Puzzle over each sentence.
Oh, well, it's recorded on free online.
Yeah,
you can go home and do that.
Yeah, you can watch it and slow it down and say, wow, that guy is an asshole. Yeah, referring to myself. Yeah. Be careful. No advice intended. Nothing's happening here. And shit that I'm saying or you're saying or anyone else is saying doesn't mean anything. And so the real disturbing revelation is that you nor anybody needs to process anything at all. That takes a little getting used to. Because we're so driven by our, you know, path and our processes and our catharses and our devotions that processing and becoming and fruition and da-da-da-da-da are attractive to us. Sensually and psychologically and spiritually and like that's not the case. You don't need to process anything. Not that I'm saying I'm a total idiot or that, you know, people throughout history that really were someone said. Because there's nothing to be found. And you can't possibly benefit, really, from the processing of anything. Mm-hmm. You see what happens, how quickly consciousness identifies with, wow, this being, this is far out. Oh, let's take it on the road. Let's see what it can do, right? right? Let's put it into fifth and kick some shit. What's the high end? You know, how far will it tack? Like, leave it alone. Turn the ignition off and walk off the track. And that instinct, that intuition, that intelligence, that's not processable. That's just, yeah, I'm fucking done. Again, through no vow, no commitment, not through knowledge, right? It's not causal. Awake is not causal. This is a causal.
It's astounding having the journey from traditional religion and to traditional mysticism with all the trappings and your rituals and so forth and so on. And then to gradually completely disregard all the props connected with spirituality.
Yeah.
And be completely ordinary.
Yes. Yeah. Lock up the prop room and walk out of the theater.
Those words, be completely ordinary, are pretty freaking.
As long as you're there
trying to be special with spiritual anything.
I suppose there's sort of a practical mythology. I think that there are four kinds of people in the world. There's unconscious folks with no interest in spirituality. There's semi-conscious people with interest in spirituality. There are people who are awake. Then there are people who are awake who have special gifts on top of that. And those guys are the ones that make a lot of noise and get famous and so forth. But no, I mean, the way reality seems to work in terms of process for the planet and civilizations and scriptures and traditions and so forth, there seem to be such people. I wonder if there's really any kind of, there's no technical distinction between even those guys and everybody else. We are all, quote unquote, prophets of one sort or another.
Those kinds of super personalities, whether celebrities, artists, sports figures, broadcasters, or
founders.
Yes. Right. You're like, yeah. It's an existential habit to qualify. A young person might know a lot about baseball for the last 60 years. Someone else, model rocketry, right? Someone else, porn stars of the 80s. That's mine, but, you know. Or Ramana and Nirsagadatta and Aurobindo and Krishnamurti and, Shivapuri Baba and fucking Muji, even.
Rajneesh, don't forget
Rajneesh. That's right, Osho, yeah, sure. Bring it on, you see? So it's just another fetish.
Wait, speaking of Osho, I was just reading something about him. Did he really, like, summon his minions to, like, poison the, like, food or the water supply or whatever?
His followers tried to poison something him at like one that. Point.
Tried to poison him? No, I thought he sent them out to poison the whole town. And, they, like, a bunch of people got, like...
There was a... They went to a local sizzler
and put
salmonella in the salad bar, I don't think it was that many. In the hopes that, because there was a meeting coming up in the community that would set the course for political influence for the zoning people. So what they were trying to do was make sick, not kill, people who might have voted, so that they could have a majority vote to shift political influence for the purposes of zoning and all the other stuff they were trying
so
to pursue.
Spiritual.
I thought, yeah. Yeah. And then later on, because he died not that long after he was thrown out of the United States and returned to India, that the powers that, caught up with him and deported him poisoned him on his, on the plane or something. Mm-hmm.
Unless one downfall of being a celebrity, someone's always looking to kill you. There's always
You got to be careful.
It's always somebody.
When Muktananda died,
my primary guru is Muktananda.
Okay, yeah. Got it. And so, who's your downstream?
Chidhalasana was
Chid?
Initiation through her.
Yeah, yeah.
Blasted everything wide open.
Yeah. Shocked the gal with a bullet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Fallsburg, India? Where?
Either? In South Fallsburg.
Fallsburg, yeah.
I went to India for a year.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, went around the country.
Yeah.
Stayed at that ashram.
So it was before Chid became as influential and powerful as she did. It was around the time of Muktananda's passing that a then so-called realized devotee, his name escapes me, claimed foul play because his body started decomposing much faster than it should have as an accomplished yogi of his ilk.
Well, I know.
There's a lot of stories.
there's the Yanishwar Maharaj story from the 16th century to that effect. And so I'm unfamiliar with this as far as the skeletons in the city of the closet. That one I'm not aware of.
Oh, yeah.
Something about, Shankaranand is alive. I need to have a hooray story so I knew who actually died and whose body. So what happened? This is fascinating.
Yeah, I hear you.
The stuff is part of the course, like moving on, fooling around girls and so forth.
Uh-huh, yeah. That's right.
And it was girls at least.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, Muktananda, I think, mostly did it with the girls, yeah. Some of them were underage, they say.
Interesting thing. I always thought, okay.
It was a non-penetrative intercourse. It was just putting the head of the penis somewhere around the vulva for, call it, Shakti exchange.
Transmission.
Like coding, which lit him up. Think of it as a transfusion.
And coning.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. He gave good cone. But who knows? I wasn't.
It made the Catholic Review. There was a lady who wrote an article, Catholic Review, based on that spirit.
There was all tons of breakdown around his behaviors, his passing, Chidvalasananda's behavior, the outing of her brother.
Yeah.
The accumulation of the wealth and the power over the ashram when Muktananda's intention was that the two of them would share it, and then they harassed him for years. Yeah. Well, there you go. I mean, this is that much fun. And you see, when you get blown open, and getting blown open is a rush. I mean, I would do it over and over and over again if I had any more lifetimes. And I sure hope I fucking don't. But if I had any more lifetimes, I would sign up to get blown open again and again and again. But you see, that, as lovely as it is, sets the fetish wave in motion. You think something happened to you? Didn't. But you remember it as something happened to you. And that sets the fetish wave in motion. Then realization becomes a destination, an event, a remedy, an ameliorative, which is not true. But that's the price you pay for being blown open by, a Shakti holder. Paid dearly for it.
Yeah, nothing like the post-event sadness.
There's that. Yeah.
Just trying to get back.
Yeah. Post-shock. My whole life has been a bad case of post-shakti depression.
You still have the image of somebody's penis just kind of hanging around.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Saved by the bell.
Talk about traumatized.
Unless you were a devotee of Sai Baba. Then you might have that. It goes on and on. It's so rich. It's so intimate. The juice of the Leela. The sensory and supersensory seduction. That's how Kali plays it. That's what she knows best. So, and we sign up. We can't refuse her. It's not possible to refuse her. But, maybe it's possible to see through the sacred ruse Mm-hmm. And then the imagination of fruition just dissipates. Then you don't have any claim to make. And along with it, 11 dimensions, whether Ekankarish or
Jewish
Merkaba, Kabbalah. I was thinking of the master with the nose, Meir Baba.
Yeah.
Because he was very big on, you know, dimensionality and stuff like that. Yeah. It's just, you know, this is just Kali playing roulette. That's all. And for as long as it's captivating, well, then, you know, we're products of that captivation. We're held captive by that captivation.
And to be one of these teachers who must teach through the vehicle of a long tradition with certain scriptures and certain rules and conventions.
Yeah.
To have to communicate that way. It's just for me, it's just thinking of the different ways that different teachers do it under different circumstances.
Sure.
And how it can be. It can all be the same thing.
Hey, it's 2017. We're out of fucking time. And this is the West. Not that that means anything. But as the Dharma, right, as the Dharma travels through cultural medium is the earth, the foliage, the animals, the quality of air, right? I mean, right? This thing is traveling through medium, and the medium is civilization and how civilization rolls. And so let's say in the West is just a metaphor for like, yeah, we don't have to play the comic book anymore. We don't have to be held captive by the metaphors and cosmologies that have come before. And that's what's so bothly radically liberating and disturbing to many, because they're not yet ready to stand in Brahmanic wonder and put an end to spiritual codependency. That's the invitation. At least that's what we like to play around with. You can see, you know, one can see in oneself that the proclivity for fetishizing spirituality, for codependency, for worshiping masters worthy of worship, we remain adolescent. I mean, all those systems would encourage one to be worshipful, you know, to do the four noble truths and the eightfold path and the this and the that and the tradition and the this and the that and the tradition. And those are all self-serving. That's just like the Pope wearing a big hat around in big hats. What the fuck do they know? They don't know anything. The Dalai fucking Lama doesn't know anything. Yeah, he's a nice guy. But he's also, because of his station in life, in terms of his influence over Tibetan culture, there's a bunch of people that want to kill him, and probably for good reason. Not me, but, you know, all kinds of weird, strange Buddhists that have been disenfranchised by the political exigency of the Dalai Lama are not happy with his authority. And I'm not saying he's good, bad, or indifferent. It's just kind of comes with the territory. If you're the king of the Tibetan people, whether you're enlightened or not, you know, it's a fucking drag. And now the Chinese took out the Panchen Lama, and he knows it. He knows that the hopscotching of the Panchen Lama and the Dalai Lama to recognize each other over multiple generations within the Tibetan culture has just been usurped, not so recently, by the Chinese, because they kidnapped the Panchen Lama and they replaced him with a fraud. So that means when the present Dalai Lama dies, the Chinese would like to use their shill to say who the next Dalai Lama is, which is not going to be the genuine inheritor of that tradition, which means the Tibetan culture, which the Chinese have been trying to do for quite a long time, gets liquidated. And he knows it. He doesn't get on TV and say, I'm really sad. about this, you know, because he's forced by virtue of his station to be, you know, compassionate or diplomatic.
Yeah, right. He's like, I'm not going to come back finally. I'm done. I'll see you guys
it
later.
It could be that, too. He's like, hey, you know, it's been a blast, but, you know, it's over. But we can find all of these absurd conspiratorial references no matter where we look. Everywhere.
Yeah, it's inspiring to punch a monk who can sit in solitary confinement for 10 years and get out without. Got out and started protesting again. Then they finally poisoned him.
Yeah. Okay.
But just to be able to sit in solitary, not be bothered at all, to not go nuts.
You know? Yeah. Yeah.
This, you're sitting in the fullness of the core effulgence of reality. And
yeah.
You've got it all, so there's no.
Yeah.
You're not going to chew your fingers off like someone, like people in solitary usually do.
Yeah, that's right.
In the Western Hemisphere.
Yeah.
You know, I chew their own fingers off, and I've heard that.
Yeah,
that's a new one.
The average person, I mean, people go in solitary in average prison, nothing to do, so they tend to chew their fingers off.
Well, my son's been in for extended periods of time, and he never did anything. He's in for like 75 days right now.
In solitary?
Yeah.
Well, it depends, but, you know, they define solitary differently. Solitary isn't, the solitary that I've heard about isn't actually a solitary, it's the impression you get from the word. But maybe I'm wrong.
I can't speak to what it means. I wanted to ask you or bring up
don't ask me
the feeling that I have when I get involved in holy books or it could be Rumi.
Really
whatever
it's a high end holy book
it's not necessarily to gain knowledge it's to enjoy a reflection.
Yes.
You might say.
Sure.
And I think that's, for me, that's an attraction.
Belong to a bowling league.
I'm getting the poo-poo from you. Okay. Well, that doesn't mean shit.
It means what it means when it means that. And who's to qualify it? Whatever this means as it means to whomever it means it to, when it means it to, and the way that it does, is the way that it is, but not really, because anything you say about it is just an after-the-fact contrivance. You want to read Rumi? Fucking read Rumi.
But what other, like, if you were to look for a pastime.
Crack. Smoking crack?
I'm afraid of crack.
All right, then. Something a little less than crack.
That doesn't work.
Stay with the Rumi.
I mean, it's like a pastime.
Of course.
Where you go, where you get your best hit.
Yeah, that's right.
It's better than cutting your fingers off.
You know?
Yeah, it's better than chewing your fingers off, so I'm with it. Down with that.
I used to read his stuff standing in line in the ashram. It's just high in
food.
Poetry.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's good. Read Rumi.
Yeah.
By all means.
Yeah.
You know, read Rumi and Wallace.
However, that same hit can come from nothing.
That's right. Yeah. Check out at Redner's.
But, you know, you're looking for it, but I'm still going after that hit. From somewhere.
Why not?
You know?
Sure. Do you think your just addictive nature was just going to go away?
Well, no, I don't even know.
Good luck with that, sucker. We can all find, you know, anecdotal references to what we think has occurred prior to this moment, what shaped our personas and, you know, spiritual aspiration. And we can even take all of that myth seriously enough to imagine that I like or don't like things, that I've been shaped by things, that I've been inspired by fantastic masters that defy physics, right? It's all good.
Okay, I think we've worked that out.
All right, then.
Yeah.
So all right, then.
I did it again.
Okay, it's not.
I'm raising the bar, though.
No, that's good. That's right. Yeah. It's really, really, it is. It's a strange. Consciousness distances itself from itself faster than you take notice. That's what samsara is. It distances itself from itself faster than you take notice. So then we become inebriated by and enthralled by the exuberance with which consciousness can appear to create a binding mirage. Okay, got it. And everything, secular and spiritual and in between, whether fingers to the bone or, you know, able to endure difficult circumstances for decades without, you know, it doesn't matter. It just doesn't. Why would I value a yogic master that can endure egregious circumstances without effect? Well, because I crave invulnerability for my own, right, existential disquietude. So then I place that in a hierarchical position of wonder, respect, perhaps adoration. And that's understandable, but that's a reaction to the identity that, right, one imagines one is the product of, to hold something yogically miraculous in esteem. Fuck it.
Usually only like little pieces of it, you know, like, well, I want to be sanguine, but I don't really want to sit in a cave and be eating my buds.
This,
I want to be sanguine enough so I might be able to sit in a cave and be, you know, it means like we're
that's
like,
right. That's right.
An hour a night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and our prodigious
really what you want.
Our prodigious capacity to imagine events and circumstances, to esteem yogic feats, to aspire to, you know, enlightenment or imperturbability is binding. It's samsaric. Yeah, because an identity gets created instantaneously. An association with body-mind accompanies this sense of identity. Subject-object befuddles us. Then we're at risk to every insult and injury that human beings are capable of meting upon human beings. And that's just, that has no limit. I mean, you know, we're insane in terms of what we can do with, call it a, you know, neocortex and opposable thumb. I will take the fucking planet.
Not a coffee.
Right. So, yeah, we're capable of heinous acts. And of course, you know, those, that frightens us. It's intimidating. It's unpleasant. So a reflex occurs for us to try to whittle out of, right? Either present suffering, past suffering, or the imagination of future suffering. And one of the ways we do that is to hold yogic feats of imperturbability in high esteem. Big deal. And it's the hierarchy which occurs spontaneously as measure, as comparison, as discernment, as pleasure and preference, that is the samsaric impulse. So, yeah, so getting wiped clean of our own fetishistic predilection is challenging, thrilling and challenging. But if we don't do it, we will continue to remain under the influence of these robust, throbbing identity vectors that don't really exist. You know, where that leads you, well, that's your fucking problem. Right? I don't know. You see how we're like, you gotta see how time jumps on your back. A sense of self having existed prior to now, existing now, hopefully or you know, expectantly, predictably existing a moment from now. And that's just a huge wave of some samsaric impulse. So like, oh, hey, I'm not a product of time. I'm not a product of I'm. the subject-object pulse wave doesn't seduce me. One doesn't become inert. One doesn't have to go into some kind of rigor mortized samadhi. I mean, those are nice. You know, if they come and go, you know, yeah, if it comes, you know, take a ride. But to aspire to rigor mortized samadhi as an indication of my success as an enlightened being. Fuck that.
So others can worship.
Yeah, right. For what? For imperturbability? For invulnerability? For emancipating myself from the body mind? From gesticulating wildly like Nirsagadatta? No, oh, fuck.
I was, the particular time and place I was in, there happened to be, you know, three different teachers who were close enough around.
Yeah.
For particular times where I could see them all within 3 days.
Cool.
Or 2 days.
Yeah.
And the very opposite of what you're supposed to do instead of City Yoga Orthodoxy, sticking to guru and so forth.
Yes, City Yoga Orthodoxy. Yeah. Right.
So I go see this guy, this Indian guy who he comes out, his classic, his arms and legs are withered and deformed because he spent so much time sitting in a cave.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And, wow, so that's a case of real.
Got a trade? Got to make money. Yeah. Well, if you get a big hit, take us out to dinner, you motherfucker. Yeah. I mean, our friend Ryan.
I get a loan.
Yeah, hit it.
There goes my retirement.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, when the currency markets start to swing, he has to go into action.
But he has a bus to catch or a ship to get to, I guess.
He has a trade to make.
He has his phone set to alarm when it crosses a certain threshold.
He's lost his mind. Don't worry.
He has lost his mind.
He has to go get off his computer.
Yeah. He's a nerd.
I think a lot of this.
Money nerd.
Well.
Man, I wish I was.
Better than being a crystal meth nerd.
Yeah. Well, that's.
Maybe.
Yeah, it is. Tells me.
So, I'm sorry. Three teachers. You got interrupted by
this. It just struck me, this guy. You know, that's like. I read that by Bart. He said this is like a Christian fundamentalist. You know, these guys who think that you should be awake. But
Well, you know, Buddha cautioned about the extremities of certain yogic austerity practices, and coined the middle way. You know. Chill the fuck out on the way to realization. If we become seduced by phenomenality, then a value system blossoms instantaneously as myth. And that's what Mara was throwing at the Buddha under the Bodhi tree, kept throwing, the seduction of phenomenality, of implication, of this being about something, about value systems, about lust and fear and danger and greed and successful day trading. And the Buddha was like, fuck you. In a kind way, because he had to be. And then the gesture was a paganistic gesture, which was touching the earth.
Right.
And it was the, call it the grounding to the Gaic womb that dispelled Mara's onslaughts. And here we are, under the Bodhi tree. Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we have brownie bites.
And we have brownie bites, so we're good. That's the fun of it, see? Consciousness unadorned by, narrative, by reference field, is under the Bodhi tree, touching the earth, and the pageantry of seduction is dispelled. And no claim need be made. and no teachings. Need ensue. Yeah. But maybe it takes 2,500 years, give or take, for the revelation of emptiness to be communicated, shared, without cosmology, without hierarchy.
Right.
Yeah.
Enough people understand this. So.
Yes. A Buddha did his best, right? They say, I wasn't there. Maybe I was, but I forgot. That he was like, I can't tell anybody about this. I don't know anyone that would have a clue.
In the first 2 weeks after enlightenment, it said that his greatest temptation was not to teach. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. This is cool. Oh, yeah. Bunch of fuckers are suffering. Oh, well. You know, and then came the karmic, right? The karmic impulse. And then the generations of co-opting the revelation and turning it into a cosmology. Oh, well. Shucks.
Yeah, Parvati still likes to think that the notion of planetary evolutions, the planets evolving spiritually, just as individuals evolve spiritually. You know.
Please, yes, of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nation states can evolve spiritually.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
I don't see any evidence of it, but it's a nice idea.
Yeah, they can drop down a couple levels too, it seems to me.
He's got to get worse before they get better, I suppose.
Yes. This is improvisational. Really, really it is. I mean, this is a fucking rubber room. Nation state's an idea. Evolution, an idea. The sentiment that accompanies it, it's not yours. It's just perturbation in a field. And that the imagination that this is physical, that this is time and spatial, that it has... that operates according to evolutionary impulses, or that it's causal even, is not true. But if you want it to be true, most people will agree. And then share with you their Ekankaric cosmology so that you can become tithing to them. But you needn't. You needn't participate or invest in any cosmology at all. And that's one metaphor for, you know, present liberated understanding. Cosmology free, causality free, implication free. This doesn't mean anything. It doesn't do anything. It's not about anything. But if we still hold the slightest seed that it is, right? You're lit with magical delusion, which is fantastic. If we go extinct by virtue of exigent, short-sighted, a-spiritual, non-ethical, amoral behavior.
Eckhart Tolle said that. I went to an Eckhart Tolle retreat at Omega. He said that if the planet could shake us off like a
door. Flee.
Go back to 5% for a whole new start in the population, you know.
Yeah.
He said, we're going to destroy ourselves if we don't wake up.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, probably most people at the SAND conference agree.
At the what conference?
SAND. Science and Non-Duality.
Oh.
You know those folks?
Mm-mm. Okay.
Hey, we saw Jeannie Zandi come through here last week or 2 weeks ago. And in the casual amorous repertoire that we were having with her, she made the comment that the Earth is dying, and therefore commit yourself to joy, waking up. It was a very casual remark, but that's what she said. You know, no one was like, "Do you really mean that?" you know, just whoop. So, you know, yeah, Eckhart is a sensitive enough guy. He sees the writing on the wall as concerns. That's
actually just.
That's right.
Not a fucking moron. It's really
yeah.
not that.
That's right.
Oh, are you magical? You thought that up, really?
Well.
Just like,
he's a leprechaun.
He's a leprechaun.
Don't take him that seriously. He wears a funny hat and he sits at the bottom of a rainbow and he has a pot of gold.
That's interesting. When you wake up, you don't automatically start recycling. You don't automatically go vegetarian or start recycling mm-hmm. or doing all these other good things that you do.
Might go actually the opposite.
Yeah. You might go, no, recycling is not going to save you.
You know, the link between what we might refer to as waking up and then what would you call it? Progressive behavior. Right, progressive, life-sustaining behavior. There's nothing. There's nothing there.
Yeah, like
one guru in Vermont loves allopathic medicine. People go to him with various complaints and frustration, and he just says, go see your doctor, take the pharmaceuticals, do the surgery, and that's that. Someone else is like herbs and crystals and homeopathy and ear candling and what? You see, across the spectrum,
Sunir
Sagadatta got throat cancer
and worship shit and then
throat
cancer.
That's right. And so did one of, you know, his, what was his name? The one of his devotees. What was, who was her? She died also from cigarette smoking. I think she was smoking from her throat at the end of her life, you know, through the hole.
Yeah. That's
absolutely. Even the slightest concern with who and what I've been, who and what I am, who and what I will become, is just Mara throwing monkey poo in your face. It's all this.
I wonder under how many of us non-awake people this is rationalization for inappropriate crazy wisdom.
What do you mean this?
This meaning... The shit that we're talking about?
Yeah, I mean...
It's all total rationalization. There's nothing here. Mm-hmm. Not real or unreal. Whatever you bring to it, you bring to it. Really. If one's, you know, feeling is to, you know, drink from this weird fountain and find a little nourishment in it, far out. If one's reflex is to consider it and construe it from a more, let's say, rationalistic point of view and be perturbed or dismiss it, far out. Really. Yeah, whatever karmically one needs to become in the next moment, whether in the acceptance or the rejection of a thing. Okay. Really. This is disturbing. This is alchemy. It really is. Yeah, it really is. Yeah. When you, if one lets it under their skin, and that's not up to us or anyone, but if it gets under your skin, well, then it acts as a sacred corrosive. If, and for good reason, there's, let's say, a rejection or a distancing from some of the things that we're implying, that's great, too. You can't stop this.
I think often there's a creation of another cosmology based on what one thinks one hears.
Yes, exactly, instantaneously.
You're more morph it into something we can get.
Right,
that's
and
right.
And feel safe with.
And I think maybe that's what you were referring to. You know, somebody just taking off with like, oh, yeah, you know, just putting something together based on what they think.
It's not easy to warm up to present experiencing being absolutely acausal and without implication. Because our conditioning is so strong in the direction of a defining cosmology, whether it's 11 dimensions or, you know, Christ on the cross. And that's what we're playing around with, is leaning into the impulse to invest over and over and over and over and over and over again in definition, specificity. And that's what consciousness does. That's how it convinces itself of whatever it thinks it needs to convince itself of. I didn't do it. Present experience is without reference.
I just made another useful correlation in my mind, soon to be discarded.
Yeah, I like the short-lived ones too.
The notion that, you know, the reason that the class four beings that I was talking about,
by
the way, there's the people not interested in the awake, and there's the awake plus special gifts.
Plus special gifts, yeah, awake with benefits.
The awake plus special gifts.
Yeah.
Those are the ones you find in the religions.
Yes.
Those are the big founders of the traditions and so forth.
That's right.
That's where they belong.
And that's where they belong, those fuckers. That's right. Yeah. Yes. Yes. That's profound. Because
I never quite put that together before. Whew. All the thinking I've done, but there's got to be something to that observation.
Well, my bias would be by seeing how profound, demonstrative yogic accomplishment sets up waveforms of cosmology, hierarchy, authority, and seeker see, seeker do. Then by contrast, one sees another concomitant complementary dharmic path, which has nothing to say. And I talk a lot, clearly, but it's just a cover for nothing to say. No anticipation of yogic demonstration. Free.
I have a question.
I'm making noise not because you have something to say, but because you're posing it as a question.
So. Oh, and so it's a cliche, but I'm going to use it. Are there portals into openness? I mean, I suppose there's not, but can you help me with this?
Sure. Why not? All you've got is portal.
Okay.
And portal is synonymous with actualization. Portal and fruition are exactly the same.
So then perhaps it is I'm going to use the word perspective.
Yeah.
That you feel as though certain things serve as a portal. I mean,
for sure.
So there's the sort of, what would you say, that's how you define your experience then?
Yes, it's the drama field of boundary conditions. Yes, it's the drama field of frames of reference. Yeah, because experiencing has to take itself for something something less than the possibility of being something more. And then the catharsis of paths and processes and portals arise instantaneously and proliferate across the civilization, across the ages, as multiple cosmologies of things to do and not do. You know, whether that's Western occultism or Ekankar or anything else that we can find in the lexicon of human imagination.
So, like, in the religious system then, it can seem to be a barrier, but it's actually a portal like anything else.
Yeah, anything's anything else. Okay. Yeah. It's kind of like, well, it's kind of fun. I mean, here's this. Don't ask me what it is. Where, why, how, when. It's like, what the fuck? What? The basic condition, if there were one, is, you know, absolute existential incredulity. Existential, you could say, confusion or existential non-specificity. It's completely disarming. And here it is, sitting under the Bodhi tree. It's completely disarming. So what we're struggling with, whether we're any one of the four, right, is just a fanfare of, you know, karmic proclivity, a fanfare of narrative, a fanfare of, you know, interest or disinterest. And none of it is more or less qualitative than anything. I mean, the hierarchy and the capacity for contemplating and enjoying and cultivating sacred hierarchies falls apart. And we don't miss it. Yeah, that's a little challenging, you know.
It's challenging if you're a seeker.
Yeah. If realization is the product of anything at all, it can't possibly be realization. Present experience is acausal. And that's the revelation. But what is it a revelation of? Nothing. Because it doesn't have any reference. Neither reference or frame. So, done. Just fucking done. Under the Bodhi tree.
Thinking of my biggest spiritual credential. I went to one of Amici's retreats, a couple of them.
Yeah.
The Hugging Saint.
Yes.
She's hugging person after person. And I get there. That happened three times in a row.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gosh, right. I'm going to get somewhere. That's auspicious.
She picked up your signature, man. That's right. That's right. Yeah. We're enrolled. This is fun. I mean, curiously, we're enrolled by, you know, the sacred ruse. Because it knows our Achilles heel. It knows our most intimate vulnerability. It knows how to create a handshake so that we are
enthralled.
Yes. That's right. Yes. Enthrallment was just another one of the darts that Mara was offering Buddha. And that was also without fanfare. You wouldn't even say rejected. It's like, No purchase. No purchase. What Amici is, this is. You are.
It's a good thing overall. There's more harmony around these folks. They're going to set up good vibrations overall. Yeah, there's all this crazy wisdom, interesting, fun stuff we can talk about and rationalize our poor behavior with, but it's good overall. It's a good thing overall.
The value system is yours. Good means what? Mm-hmm. Right? You know, sure. Yeah, good, wholesome, crazy, whacked out, beneficent. Sure. Check, check. Check.
Well, I think Mara, some of her hits would be, you know, the offering that she would give as a distraction can be loved.
She is
can be called good.
She's a tsunami of distraction. And has apparently done good deeds. You know, they also accused her hospitals of putting people under local anesthesia and harvesting organs.
Gotta make money somehow.
If you can't sell little chocolate dolls of Amici over and over and over again, then you know you harvest a few kidneys and no one's the wiser. You know, if you build institutions in the world, even with the most sacred, spiritual, enlightened intentionality and yogic formidability, you're going to end up tickling and triggering what we might call bizarre karma. You fuck with the world, guess what's going to happen? It's going to fuck with you right back. I don't care how enlightened you are. So, okay. If one is drawn to institutionalized masters of awakening, plenty to go see. Tithe and volunteer and go to meetings and enroll and recruit. Knock yourself out. What this is I don't know what it is, but it certainly isn't institutional. It is very curious. If you reach out and you touch, well, in a recent Facebook post, the metaphor was if you lick the frog, you're in hallucination. Don't lick the frog. If you touch the membrane of what reality appears to be, it touches back. Then enthrallment arises instantaneously, and one becomes drunk with delusional fantasy. Not a bad thing, not a good thing. It's just how, right, the mysterious nature of phenomenality teases itself into being. If realization were something, and thank God it's not, then a metaphor would be, don't lick the frog. Then there's this, as there's always been just this. And there is no cosmology. There's nothing to quarrel with. There's no institution, but there's no not institution. That freedom is sovereign. How free do you want to be?
Yeah.
Any questions?
Mm-hmm. Jeff, ask me a month, please.
Thank you.
Thanks. I love it.
Yeah.
This will never be a major aspect of mine, but it's always going to be there as an important adjunct to what I'm doing in spiritual work.
We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. It seems to be mostly, I'm going to see, I've gotten involved in, you know, TAT, Truth and Transmission.
Yeah, yeah.
Rose.
Yeah, Rose. TAT, SIG.
I'm going to talk there this coming week, this in November. Ta-da.
Well, good for you. So that's a sign of some kind of recognition amongst your peers.
Sure.
That you've been invited to speak at Bart Marshall's TAT hallucination.
Right.
Yeah.
What's the TAT stand for?
Truth and Transmission. Yeah. Interesting people.
It should be called TIT. And they should just find
something. I like
make up
truth without a thought. Yes, I hear you. Thanks for joining us, everyone. Hope you had as much fun as we did. I'll see you next time.